Hi, this is Paul. I am continuing to rearrange my little studio here and play with different setups and different equipment. Now, not too long ago, Machu Picchu, I always have trouble with the French, never learned it's different, was on Jordan Peterson's channel, and it was an interesting conversation. I didn't do a lot of commentary on it, but I did a little bit of commentary on it. And part of what's interesting about YouTube is so often that the platform is important. And so all the Daily Wire goodies that, quite frankly, are really nice because it's good to have nice video and it's good to have good sound and it's well produced and all of those things. So you had Jonathan Peugeot's brother. I'm just going to call him Matthew. Just anglicize it. Sorry about that. It's just easier for me. Matthew Peugeot. You can call me Pablo if you want. You can Latinize my name. Matthew Peugeot was on with Jordan Peterson, and it was an interesting conversation. There were a lot of interesting little tidbits in it, and quite fascinating. Well, on a very small channel, someone who hasn't paid for a full Zoom account, which I found kind of funny because you get into an hour and he's like, well, 50 minutes. I was like, oh, wait a minute. We got to disconnect and reconnect so we can start another free Zoom account. In some ways, this is a more interesting conversation. And Matthew is out there on the front porch. I don't know why. But this is part of the beauty of YouTube, that it isn't scripted. It isn't produced. It is, well, in our culture of authenticity, it feels very real. And I thought the first question was, in some ways, I'm three quarters of the way through, and I haven't listened to the whole thing, but I thought the first question was the best question and answer so far. And let's just take a listen.
That sounds good.
Okay.
I guess, first of all, could you just explain the category of heaven?
Could I explain it?
Yeah.
Probably, but I don't like doing that because what happens is it's usually a bad idea because you have to use other words, you know, to explain something that's more fundamental than the words you're using. So it's kind of, this kind of explains why I use diagrams so much in my book, because basically at one point I saw that if you start describing these things, it becomes really verbose and it becomes kind of like philosophy, and which there's nothing wrong with. But the problem with that is you don't get to talk about concrete things when you do that. You end up just philosophizing, and you end up just doing, I guess theology kind of does that in a way. It goes off into really abstract terms, and then at one point you realize you're not really talking about reality. You're not really talking about concrete reality. So,
and I think this is one of the things that this little corner of the internet with the thinky talkiness that we get into really sort of revolves around. Now, one of the more interesting things to sort of emerge in this little corner of the internet, Jacob, while ago when he was at Living Stone, shared with me his vision of basically a 24-hour channel. And I think probably we're seeing that emerge now, and Jacob sort of spearheaded it when he left Bridges of Meaning Discord and he started his Just Chatting. In my opinion, and I think in the opinion of others, the real heart of Bridges of Meaning Discord were the spontaneous voice and video conversations that we're having on the channel. Part of the difficulty about a Discord server is that there's so much text chat, and part of what using something like StreamYard is that it is chat and it is video chat. And I think what we're trying to do is get beyond some of what Matthew has pointed to, because we want the talk and we want the thinky-talky stuff, but we really do want to do some things. And so there are individuals who are, there's definitely a hierarchy, and basically that it is sort of a meritocracy in many ways, because some of the individuals whose names are regular to each other and whose faces are increasingly with each other, and there's communities and friendships evolving. This is what we're talking about, because we have a sense that, just as with the question, well, you can talk about heaven, but we don't really want to talk about it. We want to experience it. And so this is another little episode.
And I didn't finish it. So, you know, I want to be fair, but it sounded like none of them understand why they're in this, what this corner is and why they're there. But I think it's more like something like Chad's talking about, like we're implementing these ideas. Like we're working through this on the ground, right? Because Vervaeke's not, right? Jordan's not. Jonathan Peugeot is probably working it more on the ground, right? Because he's got the website and the community and all that.
And so Mark's definition of what working it on the ground is, it's fairly close to Joey's idea of making something, where we want to make something. And Joey in the previous video talked about, you know, the internet is sort of like free real estate. We want to make something. And we don't just want to make YouTube videos, although that certainly has been part of it. YouTube as a platform has sort of been the central platform for this. By the way, if you're not checking out Chad's channel, you're really missing something. After some of the drama around the German festival, Chad renamed his channel, and it's currently the Friday Morning Nameless. And Chad, for a while, started the Bridges of Meaning Hub channel, and he was doing sort of the Bridges of Meaning news, trying to distill some of this stuff, trying to participate. Participation has been a huge element of what we've been trying to do. I think we often have a sense that, well, we're watching this stuff online, and Grim Grizz is a big part of this because right away he's been about breaking the fourth wall. Estuary has been a big part of this. We don't just want to sit and watch videos or listen to content. We want to have a face. We want to have a name. We want to have a voice, which is I thought the whole time that in many ways this little corner is really what YouTube is about, or originally about, just in terms of the name, more than sort of what YouTube has become. And so Chad's doing all sorts of fun things, sort of curating stuff that's going on in different places. And you can see Chad's a very creative guy, and he's just playing around with that.
But there's no community really around, and there's nothing to be around. I mean, this goes back to Neoplatonism. I don't think there's a thing to be around in Neoplatonism. There's nothing. The only thing you could be around is Plato and Aristotle, roughly speaking, with some additions from Plotinus. But see,
that's Mark critiquing Vervaeke, and Mark often has a number of critiques and positive things to say about John's work.
That actually matters, right? And so part of our struggle is that back and forth, and you know, that's where the rubber meets the road, right? We're jumping the Izzat gap, right? Things, you know, ought to be a certain way. And when you try to implement them, what do they actually look like? What's the isness actually look like? How messy is it?
I would say that Paul, though, and Jonathan, and even Jordan, to a certain extent, but not no longer, like Paul is, you know, he has Eddie, he has the Eddie and Paul show. Right? You know what I mean? And he's living in Livingstone.
Freddie's going to be so happy at the mention of the Freddie and Paul show.
And so, like, I think in a certain sense, while we interact him as Paul, you know, 25 subscribers, you know, top of the hierarchy sort of in this little corner, there's also, he wakes up in the morning, there's the guy outside that's, like, kicking his trash. So, like, there's definitely a sense of, like, he's still living this embodied version and playing with this on the ground. And Jonathan, like, I mean, I know he says he's an icon carver. I've never seen any of these carvings, but I'm just saying, like,
and, you know, part of this is why this video with Matthew it's on his front porch, and it's only got a free Zoom account, and he's just off there spinning. And some of us are like, well, what's with these crazy? That Matthew is different from this Matthew.
I've seen them. They're real.
I was saying, he's like carving, right? He's in it. He just did this comic. His brother is popping out in the middle of the wilderness with a beanie on his head, spewing wisdom. You know what I mean? Like, they're in it. Jordan had years of, you know, his clinical practice. Now he's clearly removed, right? So I'm saying, but he was in touch on the ground, mm-hmm. and which he came, and that's what gave so much power to his ideas and to his speech. Was like, listen, this is what like the data shows because I spoke to like, you know, like 700 of these women and like that's what they're showing me, right? So so he clearly was embodied as well. I agree that what you're saying about Sevilla and Paul, you know, Grizz is in his cryptic way sort of telling them that like, you know, in this space, in this like hive mind that we're building, you know, but it's sort of like if you give them a title, that's the problem. Like, then.
And I thought that was a really key insight. You know, to a certain degree, when the intellectual dark web got named the intellectual dark web, it was already over. And this little corner, fortunately, the title is difficult enough that it hasn't congealed or cohered, but like it or not, we're still in this culture of authenticity, and we're wrestling with the question of, okay, what can be built? What can be done? Where does this go?
And then it becomes very delicate, right? Like, I don't think Paul could be Paul if he's titled.
No, but that's part of the sacrifice I was talking about on the stream yesterday. Like, there is a sacrifice in becoming a leader. And part of that sacrifice is you are removing yourself from the day to day. And that's, you know, look, there's a problem there for sure. But on the other hand, if you don't have a leader, you're not going to manifest something that's going to last, right? Because leadership is important.
We see that with Jethro and Moses, right? So Jethro tells him, he's like, listen, Moses, the Israelites are coming in day in and day out, and you're giving.
And the Jethro Moses story is important, but I want to take Mark's comment and reach back into the distributed relevance realization, because that is really key in this. And if we go back to Matthew's front porch video,
I can do it, but it's something like.
Now you remember he's been asked a question about heaven, and he's resisting answering it because he has an understanding that in many ways talking about it, answering it, reduces it. And that's what happens with speech. You have to reduce something into something malleable, into something that can be worked through. And so he's really wrestling with, you know, whether he wants to do this, and he's going to do it.
A goal, I guess. And the idea is that you have an idea that is extremely simple, okay, and you don't necessarily see that idea. You don't perceive it, and then. The reason you don't perceive it is because you just hear it as something to look at. You hear it as something that you have to analyze, right? But really, what you're supposed to do is actually use that to interpret reality. So, I mean, the easiest examples to me is if you take a formula in physics, right? If you just look at the formula itself, it's kind of nothing, right? I mean, here's
the critical example.
If you study, let's say, Newton's formulas, like, let's say, force equals mass times acceleration. If I just tell you that and you just look at the formula itself, it's nothing. It's what's the point of that? It's a really simple formula. So to most people, if I would just say, oh, I found the secret of physics, force equals mass times acceleration. Most people, and pretty much all people, will just say, yeah, okay, real interesting, you know, and move on. So that's an example of heaven, you know, and nobody hears it. Nobody sees it. Over time, people manage to be able to see it. Not everyone, not a lot of people actually use physics and study physics in reality, but the people who study physics, they experiment, you know, they see it in concreteness. They have many examples over time of this formula being applied to reality. And then they start to see in this example, something like what we could call heaven, they start to see the seed, you know, the seed or the idea or the theory. But before that, if you just mention...
Now the, his use of the seed here is really clever and important because, of course, the seed is in some ways the... Jesus uses this example. C.S. Lewis points out in Miracles that Jesus' use of this example is particularly interesting because even from ancient times, the idea of the seed was that it has the information, okay, for the formation of the plant, of not just the plant, of the field, of the vineyard, of everything that is dreamed about. It has an information in miniature, and given the right circumstance, will yield that which is desired. And so all of the thinky-talky stuff here is, in some ways, farmers talking about the field before planting. But the real planting, and I've made this point with Luke often, the real planting isn't really on the internet. And John Van Donk made this observation to me once. He said, you know, if your channel is successful, fewer people watch your videos. And I said, that's right. Not that I don't like what you watching my videos. You're certainly welcome to watch my videos. But the internet itself isn't the telos. The internet itself is a means, it's a conveyor, it's hopefully a tool that brings us towards something. And what we're struggling with is, what exactly is that thing? Now, part of the nature of sort of guru status, and part of, again, what's so fun is this Matthew Pajot is much more has much more guru vibe than this Matthew Pajot. I just caught another interesting video I want to bring in. Now, many of you will recognize this guy. These are major YouTubers early on, big time in it. You know, 3.5 million subs. Multiple channels, and in terms of cultural politics, would be on the other side of Elon Musk buying Twitter.
A few months ago, I made a video arguing that Elon Musk misunderstood the challenges of content moderation in social media, and that I figured he was quickly discovering, as Nilay Patel has said, that the main product of a social media platform is content moderation.
Now, that's a really savvy observation by Nilay Patel, that part of what we want... See, okay, we can talk about Twitter, but Twitter itself, even though it lives in this weird internet cyberspace, Twitter itself has a formation, and the network itself is content moderation because it's all of those little selections. It's all of those little choices, what can and can't be said, what is and isn't said, and the essential truth of every social network is that the product is content moderation. Everyone hates the people who decide how content moderation works. Content moderation is what Twitter makes. And I think that's a super important insight.
Is content moderation, whether that's recommendations or algorithmic feeds or demoting and censoring hateful content. I think that I was right about that, but also that Elon was right about something else that I totally missed and should have seen. I am a person who professionally understands a large group of people. That's not the whole job, but it's a big piece of it. Like understanding what people will like, what they're thinking about, what they're concerned about, what they're worried about, what they're excited about. And Elon Musk is absolutely right that his people, his audience, are really worried about something that they call free speech. This is not what I call free speech, and it is not what is protected by the First Amendment, but it is a thing, and it's a totally legitimate thing. Here,
now again, when we think free, we think, again, there's freedom from and freedom to. Many of us, if there's a piano in the room, are free to go up and place our hands on the keys and press them down and make sounds. Freedom from someone that puts a sign and says, please don't play the piano, okay? So I don't like the sign. I want to be able to play the piano. Ah, but can you play the piano? Freedom to make beautiful music come out of the piano. Those are the two sides of freedom. And part of what, I forget these dudes' name, they're brothers. Part of what we're dealing with is the fact that freedom is not just chaos. It's not just null. It's not just blank. It has formation.
Here it is. Internet media platforms have a huge influence on society. And there are people who work at those platforms who we do not know and thus cannot trust, who have a huge influence on what is allowed on those platforms and what is promoted and demoted. That's real. And it's weird, and it's worrying, because this is a lot of how people communicate now. Now, what Elon Musk said out loud about this was, if people want laws preventing speech, they'll pass laws preventing speech. And until that happens, Twitter should just allow all legal speech. That's what he said, but what he meant was, somebody's going to be making these subjective moderation decisions, and I don't trust them, but I do trust myself, and a lot of other people trust me too. As I tweeted a few weeks ago, a lot of people who say they want free speech actually just want to be the one in charge of which speech is free.
And Hank Green, yeah, that's a really salient, powerful point.
I thought Elon's audience was going to get super mad at him very quickly because it would turn out that he would have to continue making all these subjective content moderation decisions because Twitter still had to be a business that was appealing to users and advertisers. I was totally wrong about this. Elon Musk doesn't need to change the content moderation policies of Twitter in order to satisfy his audience because this isn't about policy. It's about vibes. It's not about...
Okay. This isn't about policy. This is about vibes. This is about how we do relevance realization through each other. And we do it on all sorts of ways, and we pick who we do it through in ways that are very difficult for us to articulate. Do we like them? Do we trust them? Is there something about them that we aspire to?
The decisions, it's about who is making the decisions. Indeed, so far he hasn't changed any policies, though I'm not going to put it past him. Even the ones that he was most upset about before he was in charge. And it seems mostly like his audience isn't at all concerned about that. So Elon...
In other words, collective relevance realization is what we do through each other. And when it comes to Twitter, let's say, well, a lot of people want to do collective relevance realization through Elon Musk. Elon Musk is, for most of us, not a person that we have a personal relationship, not a person that we know intimately, not a person that we know much of anything about, except maybe he has a successful car company that has sort of chic cars that certainly have status, and he's bringing internet in terms of rural areas, and he's got a space program, and he's very rich, and he's out there in public, and he's doing this and that and this and that. He then becomes, in some ways, the person we do relevance realization through. And now Twitter is going to be this platform, this massive platform of participation where we do this. This was part of the genius of Donald Trump, being able to colonize a certain percentage of the nation. I don't know what percentage. There's a lot of debate after the midterms, of course, in terms of what that percentage really is. Someone made the observation that Joe Biden's approval rating, like sort of a normal politician, has gone up and down and up and down and up and down. Donald Trump's approval rating was pretty much where it was from beginning to end. He had a very passionate minority of Americans who were with him no matter what. Then there was another level that were willing to give him a chance. After 4 years, a group of them didn't so much want to give him a chance, yada, yada, yada. So we're doing this relevance realization through each other. And we don't give it over totally. We give it over in little bits and chunks. And then in these platforms, whether it's wearing a MAGA hat or going on Twitter or now quitting Twitter or being on Facebook or Instagram or who you follow on Instagram or who you feed off of YouTube. That's all part of this. And of course, to a certain degree, if you look at Matthew Peugeot on the porch, some of this is going on. But now get back to what he's talking about here in terms of the reality of things and the seed. In many ways, we'll see if we've got a little bit more that he wants to say.
Casually, you know. It's most people will just ignore it. So that's an example of what heaven is. So I said before a goal, but it's not really just that. It's more than that. It can be a goal in terms of as a human, your theory of life becomes a goal to you, but it's more than that. It's also what explains phenomenon, what explains reality. But that becomes a goal in a way. You aim towards... if I think I have the plan of the universe, why wouldn't I aim towards that plan? You know?
And because none of us can sort of have the whole plan, we outsource that cognition, we outsource that embodiment to others, which make the people on the internet or on the political stage or on the religious platform or in all of these places so vital to our formation, because we outsource this distributed cognition to one another, this collective cognition, this collective relevance realization, we outsource it to one another in bit by bit by bit by bit. We do it so implicitly, we do it regularly, we do it passionately, and that's a lot of ways how we get through life. And now again, all the thinky-talky stuff has to be applied to a goal, a telos, an outcome. And then we look at each other and we ask, does this person embody what I want my life to be? I remember one young woman telling me that, you know, for her, Kim Kardashian was, you know, who she really followed and who she paid attention to and who she wanted to be like. And I think there are many people out there who want to be like Donald Trump. There are many people out there who want to be like Elon Musk. There are people out there that want to be like Matthew Pajot or Jonathan Pajot, or at least they want to be with them or next to them, and they want to be around them, and they want to, you know, and that's part of our attention because we fix on someone. And of course, in a religion like Christianity, where you want to be like Jesus, that's the point of the religion. Now, Christianity is very direct in that way. Do you want to be like the Buddha? Well, sort of. I want to be enlightened like the Buddha. And of course, there are others. Talking to my Sikh friend, do you want to be like these gurus? Do you want to be like Muhammad? Well, I name a lot of kids after Muhammad. So in Islam, you've got a lot of that going on. But we do this distributed relevance realization, collective relevance realization through each other. But the end is not the description. The description is always only sort of a seed. And so then we look around at who is embodying it. Now, what gets really interesting in this is I made a video a little while ago about Aubrey Marcus and Jonathan Peugeot's conversation, and I said that that, I think, was probably one of Jonathan's more challenging conversation, partly because a guy like Aubrey Marcus is sort of a telotic, relevant, collective relevance realization figure for many people. And one of the videos that I've been thinking about doing is sort of, I just haven't had the time really, to sort of compare Aubrey Marcus and Andrew Tate, because they're both out there as sort of, these are two figures with some real contrasts about who relevance realization, who you would want to be. Would you want to be more like Aubrey Marcus, or would you want to be more like Andrew Tate, or would you want to be more like Elon Musk? Now, for Christians, of course, they want to be like Jesus. Now, it's very interesting that what Matthew had to say about Jesus in this video.
There's something in my mind at one point regarding Jesus. There's a reason I don't talk about Jesus in my book. At one point, I decided something. I decided I wasn't going to talk about Jesus until I was satisfied with my understanding of what Jesus was really all about. And it's like, it's part of my development. At one point, I decided I didn't understand, you know? And then I started just to think differently. And now I understand a lot more things in the Old Testament than I used to. Even since I wrote my book. I mean, I don't stop. I keep, you know, if anyone's wondering what I'm doing now, I'm advancing my own understanding.
Now, of course, there's tension in there because on one hand, all of these things we have to do in a parallel fashion. We don't stop living in order to understand. We live while we understand, and it's a transjective process back and forth. We're trying to live and understand at the same time because as we do things, we learn, and as we learn, we try to do things, and it's supposed to be an iterative process. So it's not just all up in here and we plan the whole thing and then we apply. No, we play, and play is exactly the right word. Peterson's conversation with that comic was also very interesting. It's another video I want to spend a little bit of time with, because I actually got a lot to say about that video. But so we play and we iterate, but a big part of this, I'm running out of time because of a conversation in 10 minutes, a big part of this is the question of the person that we are doing the collective relevance realization through. And let's say someone like Jesus, because let's say you look at Aubrey Marcus and he's a high status male and he, he's got attributes and values that a lot of people esteem. And so that's why they watch him. You look at Elon Musk, or you look at Andrew Tate, or you look at Jordan Peterson, you look at these high status males, or for women, you know, some of these women might look at Kim Kardashian and say, she is what I aspire to become. The Buddha? Well, now you're really in a very different track. Jesus? Was Jesus successful? Do you want that kind of life? In many ways, what Jesus says is if you live like I do, you will get treated like I have been. And this is something that sort of brings us up short, because we think, is that really the way I want to live? In my sermons, I've been talking about nature religion. I think part of the reason people are attracted to to symbolism is right now, as modernity recedes, the value of symbolism and the power of symbolism is increasing, and the desire to understand. But understanding itself as in the seed, as in the formula, and I'll use those two examples, I think they're great examples, is insufficient, because the seed in and of itself has the potential and promise of the field. And what we really want are the fruits of the field. The formula only has power if the formula is employed in building the bridge or building the skyscraper or building the rocket. The power of the formula is not in the formula itself. And in many ways, we're focused on these screens looking for formulas, hoping to find seeds. But the point of all of this is doing. But then the question is, well, what is the form of that doing? And Christianity is a very peculiar way about this, because on one hand, Jesus both embodies something desirable, but also embodies something that we very much don't desire, to be persecuted, to be thought of as crazy, to be hated, to be mistrusted. These are the things that we wrestle with when we think about Jesus. Now, to rise with him and to reign with him, and we see the miracles and we think, oh yeah, that kind of power, that would be handy. But again, we usually think about that kind of power in terms of our own selfish desires and the things that we would want out of them. So in terms of this little corner of the internet, we are very much looking to understand, and I really appreciate all of the little attempts at trying things, you know, Jacob and his audacious dream of a 24-hour channel, and something that I think we tasted on Bridges of Meaning Discord, because that was a place that you could go almost at any time, day or night, and find interesting conversation, but it was difficult to sustain. And so now what you see are some of the leaders and I'd say upper-level people who are deeply interested in Bridges of Meaning are continuing to pursue it, but now in other means, and not exactly sure of where the goal is, but they know at each point that, oh, this seed produced a plant, that's interesting. But this plant in and of itself isn't quite the destination. It's not quite there. There's more there that I'm looking for. And, you know, YouTube's great song, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Boy, I'm almost out of time. Part of the message of the gospel in this, and the message of Jesus in this, is that Jesus comes as the Son of God and the Son of Man. And part of that message is that this dispensation, this version of the world, creation 1.0, is insufficient to adequately sustain the potential that Jesus has. And it also It also resists it. You see that in the prologue to the Gospel of John. The light comes into the world. The darkness and the translation of that varies from version to version. The darkness doesn't understand it. The darkness resists it. That Jesus comes in and he has a capacity that, let's say, that this version of creation is unable to adequately sustain. And so what Jesus brings into being in his resurrection is creation 2.0. And Jesus' followers begin that route. And they're still children at it. It's still in seed form. And that's why Jesus' statements about the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven are in some ways so cryptic, because it's present. And as Matthew Pajot points out again and again, seed is one of the illustrations that Jesus uses repeatedly and often in his parables. And part of what we're doing is, even though not everybody in this little corner is a Christian, what I see, what we're reaching for is that telos, that goal. And we have a sense that if we can use words better, we can see it better, when we can apply it in our life better. And there's truth to that, but there's also stumbling and inadequacy. But I think that's what we're reaching out for. So I am out of time, but hopefully this continues in the thinky-talky pursuit of the vision, a participatory vision that many individuals are jumping into and trying to figure out, how can I participate? Because participating isn't just watching. No, it's doing, because when you do, you have to make choices. And it's in the making of those choices that we learn, and in the making of those choices that we begin to realize and discover and produce. All right, I guess I got to land the plane here, because I am out of time.